Welcome back, everybody. Today, we've got with us Dr. Jordana Quinn, who is a physical medicine and rehabilitation board certified physician with her own practice out there in Golden, Colorado. Beautiful area. She really takes an approach that individuals are able to intrinsically heal and transform their bodies. And she has really developed a practice based around this philosophy. Her approach is really to transcend conventional medicine practices. And she does specialty training that really cuts across a lot of different innovative fields, including psychedelic medicine, which I'm excited to ask her about. She also does retreats for her patients, which should be interesting. So we'd like to welcome her to the show. She's here to talk all about her private practice. Welcome, Dr. Quinn.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're super excited,
to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be great. So tell us a little bit about your background. What kind of led you to doing physical medicine and rehabilitation specifically?
Good question. I think I always wanted to be a sports medicine doctor. I've been an athlete my whole life. So, and when I say always, when I did every single rotation in medical school, I was going to do that as well. So I changed my mind 100 times, but I've always been an athlete. So I've been more sports medicine minded. And initially when I went to medical school, I mean, I was either going to do pediatrics or orthopedic surgery. I think those were my two kind of top. I didn't know anything about PM&R. And then kind of long story short, as you go through all your rotations, I realized I didn't want to be in the operating room, but I could do sports medicine through physical medicine and rehab, which is the study of anything that makes you not move normally. So we did a lot of orthopedic surgery rotations. We did rheumatology, neurology. We work in a rehab hospital. We do prosthetics or orthotics. We learn we're the most well-trained in head injury and spinal cord injury. So really anything physically that makes you not move normally is what I'm trained in.
That's
so
fantastic.
That just made sense to me as an athlete. Like I like the body and how it moves.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And then what led you to being in this practice? Like, did you start out right out the gate in private practice? Was this always what you wanted?
I did start out, in residency, you always work in a hospital. I worked in a rehab hospital. And then yes, as soon as after residency, I did start off in a private practice. It was very traditional combination of sports med and pain management. And I hated it. I mean, I just hated the practice, to be honest. There was lots of problems with the practice, but I didn't feel like I was practicing medicine in a way that aligned with my values. I felt like I was begging people to take care of themselves, and all people wanted were pills. And we prescribed a ton of opiates in this practice. And so it was just like, you know, I have this pain, here's an opiate, here's this pain, here's an opiate. It just didn't feel good to me. Like, that's not why I went into medicine. I really went into medicine to have an impact on people's health in their lives. And that wasn't it. And so, not a few things happened, but I will say that, like, you realize when you're just in the like kind of medical model of the insurance world, insurance kind of forces your hands and how you can treat patients, what you can do with patients, how long you can spend with patients. And it's not health. It's not the health model. So that was a big part of it. Also, in general, I've been more holistically medicine minded my entire life. I mean, when we were in a very traditional medical school and we would be learning like the cardiology rotation and we would all have to do a presentation on cardiology or on pulmonology or on the endocrine system, I always gave the holistic like approach to care. Whatever.
I love that.
You know, whether it was acupuncture or whether it was, I mean, I don't remember how to take an herb and supplement that was similar to a medication. So that's kind of just always been in me in general. So how I got into this type of medicine was when I was working in that practice that I didn't like, and for fun, reading nutrition books. We refer out to other docs. And when I had some professional athletes that were training for their different sports, like you couldn't necessarily do a steroid injection if it was before their race or whatever they were training for, because it's on the, you know, World Anti-Doping Association list. So I'd have to send them out for something called platelet-rich plasma injections. And so looked up a clinic, found a clinic nearby that did it. I learned about these injections in residency. And so I would send patients there. And then I had a patient that had a really bad neurologic condition, and she was on a ton of opiates, and she was my age, like at the time, like early 30s, and had a bunch of kids. And she was just like, I can't take these mind-altering substances. Like, I have a family. What else can I do? And so I contacted a neurosurgeon, a friend of mine, and he was like, I know a guy who does IV magnesium drips for complex regional pain syndrome, which is what she had.
Okay.
And I was like, what? That sounds like I've never heard of that in my life, right? And so I looked up this clinic, and it was the same clinic that I was sending my patients to for the regenerative medicine stuff. And so I sent her there. In my mind, I was like, what does this doc do? This sounds cool. I should be doing this. I'm reading this stuff for fun, right? And so, kind of long story short, is I wrote them a letter, and over time they eventually hired me and mentored me for like a year before they hired me. And he was a doc that specialized in something called anti-aging medicine, which I had never heard of.
Yeah.
And what anti-aging medicine is the focus of like how we can optimize our health in our life and slow or reverse the process of aging. So you look at aging as a disease state and not as something that just has to happen to all of us. And you take it from there. So it's a ton of functional medicine. So you learn functional medicine and like lifestyle medicine. And it kind of takes all of these like alternative branches of medicine into one. And then it's, I mean, on steroids in terms of like, it's not just preventative and it's not just lifestyle, but then it's like, what other meds or supplements or things can we do to really take our health to the next level?
I love that. And anti-aging is getting to be such a big industry. Like there's so much now into it. And I don't remember ever hearing about that when I came out of med school ever.
No, I mean, I didn't know when I joined that practice, I literally was like, I could do this for a living. Like I literally, the only way I can describe it is like, I was like, I felt like home. I was like, this is why I went into medicine. Like, this is what I want to do, because I saw these patients legitimately healing from disease, as opposed to when I worked in pain management. I mean, I was sick, needles in people's spines and whatever, and they would come back over and over and over again because they still had pain, because we weren't addressing the cause of their pain. It was just like, here's a med, here's a needle, here's a thing. So I literally felt like, oh my gosh, like this is what I can do. And so, like I said, he mentored me. I go to a ton of conferences. I've gone to a ton of conferences. And yes, like I've been doing this for almost 15 years. And I feel like in the past, honestly, like 4 years.
Yeah, I'd say like 4 or 5. Yeah.
I mean, there's been a bunch of just kind of like, I think, famous/wealthy people who have written books on anti-aging. So it's a growing field, and it's really fascinating.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know a lot of people that jump to going into like kind of their own practice or going into doing something different, right? Other than what we were kind of trained in med school, can be really, really scary. This sounds like this was more like a relief. Is that accurate?
The relief of joining someone else's, there was a relief of joining someone else's practice. There was huge fears and imposter syndrome and all of the things in opening my own practice.
Okay.
So, and there's been multiple stages of when I joined that practice, I really felt like this is where I'm supposed to be in medicine. I learned so much. And I knew that I wanted to own my own practice for a long time. And when I worked for this other person, but I was busy having babies, and there was a lot of fear in like other physicians are going to think I'm a quack because like I don't practice in traditional medicine there. But that was actually a huge journey of mine to get over that, because it was a struggle of like, but I'm doing what's better for patients. Like I literally became a doctor to influence and affect people's lives and their health. And in every cell of my body, I know that I'm having the impact that I want from a patient care standpoint. And I had struggled so much with what will other doctors, like I went to an Ivy League, like residency and medical school, like, but I still like struggled with like, oh my God. And for sure, other doctors think I'm a quack, or like, you don't practice double or whatever. I mean, it's just, it was a very, I mean, it took me years to get over that, like years to get over that, like fear of what other physicians thought of me. But it's just like, I couldn't leave the knowledge of like, but this is what's better for patients.
Yeah.
You know, and it aligns with my values. And so it's, so, I mean, and I've been in, I mean, I've owned my own practice for 5.5 years. But years before I opened my own practice, I had to do that sort of like personal work of like what my values are and what's important to me and what impact I want to have in the world. And like coming full circle on that, like just as an aside, I recently went to Puerto Rico to this women physicians retreat. And I don't
I know about that
like,
one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't actually do a ton of like physician things. I do my own thing. And I was so supported, like so many of those women physicians were looked up to me, were like, I love what you do. I love your message. I can't believe, like, I want to, you know, tell me how you do that. You know, like, it was such a good feeling. Like, I thought I had gotten over that need for other physician support. And I think I got over the need for it, but it felt so like coming full circle in this web of like, wow, like other docs look up to me, you know, because I've led my own path or paved my own way, and I'm making a difference in the world. And I think, like you said, longevity medicine is becoming more recognized. And I mean, and I have results from my patients,
right?
You know, like,
right.
I'm not
like
just
the proof is there. Yeah.
The proof is there. And I mean, yes, I do have a cash-based practice, and I know we're going to talk about like all of that kind of business stuff. And it's a cash-based practice, and you do have to make an income. But the funny thing is like when other, and I will say physicians or whatever, you know, we're just trained to like, I will see other physicians like, oh, they're selling skincare in their office and roll their eyes, or, oh, they're selling supplements or, oh, they're whatever. And it's like, you are also earning money. You're just doing it through an insurance company who is like dictating what
dictating
you make,
everything.
But, like,
yeah.
We are all like, you know, we all have to earn a living. And like, I don't sell anything in my practice. Like, I don't sell t-shirts. I'm never going to sell a procedure or a supplement or a skincare thing that I don't fully stand behind and think you need. So that's like the funny thing to me is when like they roll their eyes about like selling stuff, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I make an impact on my patients' lives and can help them that way. So it's just very cool in Puerto Rico to have like that validation from other women physicians that I look up highly to, you know?
No, cool. And I think some of the, one of the big things for getting, because I think a lot of people deal with that, right? Where like you do worry about what that peer pressure is going to be like, especially if you're starting to diverge off onto your own thing, or you're starting to do more cash-based services and you're just not doing that traditional insurance-based practice. And you do feel kind of isolated, and it does feel very like, you know, unsupported. And I do think a big part of that is getting yourself into the right supportive groups, like surround yourself with the people that are going to be supportive. And if you can find those groups, maybe that are a little more supportive of private practice, entrepreneurship, like just that mindset, I think that's so much easier to get through that mental block part of it. Because it is a big part of it. So
it's a huge part of it. I think I've done the most personal growth in my life once I became an entrepreneur, and I have so much respect for all entrepreneurs in that realm, because nobody truly understands the personal growth that you have to do to become a successful entrepreneur. I mean, you have to know what your value system is. You have to know what your mission is. You have to know what you stand for as a person, because it's hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And like you said, I mean, for me, I do feel like I'm on an island as a physician, but I mean, just owning my own business. I mean, I don't have a partner in my business. My husband isn't an entrepreneur. Like, I mean, I don't have a mentor in the space. I mean, that's my own problem or whatever, but you know, some people do, but I've had to do and continue to have to do a lot of work on, you know, I mean, the first time you fire someone, the first time hiring, how do you hire people? I mean, how do you trust yourself with, I mean, everything, 100% of things in this practice, I have to know how to do, right? And you don't have to know that. And so it's, you have to do personal work to get anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that. I mean, if you can really sit with yourself and identify your values and what's actually important to you, the decision is actually really easy, I think, for most people. You know, like, do I want to continue to do this the way that I have been when I'm disenchanted with maybe how the medical industry is running? Or do I want to do things that are better for my patients and better for me? Like, the decision isn't hard. It's all the what ifs that get in your way. And it's all the mental drama of like, what are people going to think? What are my patients going to think? You know, switching from insurance to cash.
And, you know, and the fact that people, I mean, have or will roll their eyes, like, this is the hardest thing I have ever done. B, my husband was a stay-at-home dad when I opened my business. Like, we didn't have, I mean, we don't come from money. Like, I took out a business loan, and my husband was just so supportive. He's like, if this is what you got to do, we'll figure it out. And so the fear of failure, I mean, it was all me. Like, we didn't we had $0 come in the first year or whatever, something like that. And like, so this isn't like, I'm not like, I mean, I would love to be like a millionaire or whatever, but I'm doing this because exactly what you said, it aligns with my values, and I can't do it any other way. Not because my one motivation is money and screwing people over or something. And so that's also the funny part. I had a very comfortable job making very good money before I decided to blow up my entire family's life and, you know, and do this. And so there's been no comfort in it for me, and there's been no relaxation. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. Gosh. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I mean, we took out the big practice loan. My husband has been nothing but supportive, but yeah, it's hard on the spouse too. Like, he's been really terrified of it sometimes because, you know, he's a W-2 employee. And when we got married, I was like, by the way, I have a CPA because I have a lot of really complicated taxes. And he, you know, he was like, okay, so I guess we're doing this. Great. You know, but it's very, very different for somebody who's not an entrepreneur's spouse. And sometimes it's a lot of, you know, faith that you're going to get through it. And it's trying. I would say, I agree with you. I think this is way harder than medical school was. Way harder.
Oh, totally. I mean,
totally worth it, but way harder.
Yeah. You go through a path of medical school and you have a very clear outline. Like, you have to study. I mean, medical school now is the second hardest thing, you know, I've ever done, but like, you have to study and but the hardest thing you have to do is make grades to pass. I mean, and even after you get into residency, like, your grades don't matter, your performance is whatever, but you could do it. I mean, dealing with patients' lives is hard and it's exhausting, but guess what? Now I get to do all of that and learn business and marketing and how to talk to people and how to retain clients.
I mean,
how to hire and fire people and do performance evaluations and all of these things that I've learned. It's definitely an impact on your relationship. And, you know, I mean, I could not do it without the support of my husband, because there's times where I come home and I can't even talk because I'm exhausted.
Right.
And just there's also so much going on in my head. I mean, there's just like, oh God, I mean, this week, for example, I mean, I've been on a couple of different like podcasts or TV shows. It just, but like, school starts this week. I have 3 kids and then I'm hiring an MA and I'm letting someone else go. And it's like, I literally, like, I've got text messages and people are like, you're not texting me back. I'm like, I literally can't keep up.
Yep.
Like, there are not enough hours in the day to do it all.
My bandwidth is spent this week.
Like, more than spent, you know, like, I think I'm pretty high functioning or really high functioning and I have a lot of energy and I have nothing else to give. Like, there's nothing in me, you know?
Right. Oh, I feel that so much. I'll come home. My husband's like, what do you want for dinner? I'm like, to not make a decision. That's what I want for dinner.
Exactly.
Is there food going in my mouth? I'm a happy girl. Let's do it.
Yes.
So then when you went into your practice on your own, how did that really come about? Like, and did you decide to go cash right out the gate, or did you kind of play around with like a hybrid? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah. I mean, so like I said, I knew I wanted to start my own business. Even like before I was in private practice at very first, I knew I wanted to like partner in a practice or something like that. I just always had like non just employee aspirations. I wanted to start my business, lots of mind drama. I had to do all that work of getting over people thinking I'm a quack and all of that. And then I will say it takes probably about a year. It took me about a year from like, okay, this has to happen now. I was turning 40 and I was like, it's terrifying, but I'm going to regret it more if I never try than if I try and fail. And that was the decision for me.
Yes.
Like, that was just it. Like, I can try and fail, or I can never try. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to fail, but I rather try than have never tried at all. And so that was like literally the decision whenever I decided, and I was turning 40 and I was like, now's the time. And so again, it took about a year to like create a business plan, find a lease, all of those sorts of things. I'm happy to go into more detail if we need to, but just like, just sitting and thinking about what I want this practice to look like. Fortunately, you know, I was already working in like this, like, anti-aging medicine practice. So I knew the treatments that I wanted to provide. I think I actually like went full in with like everything. I could have started a lot slower, but I didn't. And that was overwhelming, but you know, you learn as you go. So I think the first thing I did so I wrote a business plan, then I hired a lawyer who specialized in helping physicians start a business.
Yeah.
So I created an LLC and got a bank account, these business things. So you start little by little. And then found a place, signed a lease, quit my job. And then, started thinking about furniture in the place, and then like getting an EMR, and you're like, I was thinking about all of the things that, you know, like I had in my other practices. The hard part actually is, as a physician, I'm used to walking in a room and having like my procedure tray set up for me. So the hard part for me was thinking like, oh, what goes on my procedure trays? Because now I had to write all of my SOPs for anyone. And it's still a work in progress in terms of creating SOPs for the front desk or for a new MA that we're hiring.
Oh, yeah. Those constantly get edited.
They constantly are. So that's constant, but just creating SOPs for every procedure I did, because I never had to do that because it was always, I walked into a practice and it was done for me.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it will say like day by day, you know, signing up with medical supply companies, signing up with labs. So I don't take insurance. I did not take insurance from the beginning.
Okay.
That was a very conscious decision. People told me I should at least take Medicare because that will get people in the door. But I had worked in a practice, a different practice where they were all insurance and then they tried to do like a hybrid model. And it's just, I just don't think it, I mean, it can work for people. I still have friends who just do take insurance for the initial visit and everything else is cash.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do that because I saw that like, it's a different mindset of the patient in terms of when someone thinks insurance is going to pay for it, they're like a more passive participant in their health.
Yes.
And when someone is going to call me and wants to pay for my services, they are a more active member of their health. And so I didn't want to have the conversations of what's covered by insurance or not. I know I could have been very clear that like our initial visit's covered and then after that, everything's cash, but they just like the insurance muddies the waters, like what's actually legal, what's not. Have taking Medicare gets complicated in terms of then you like, I don't even know if you can really do anything else with a Medicare patient, you know,
not
like
really.
What's covered. And I don't want the responsibility of keeping track of what your insurance covers. Like, why is that my responsibility if I'm trying to do, and most of the things I do, insurance doesn't cover anyhow. So I made that decision and it was a very, and still is a very slow growth process.
Sure.
So that again was a conscious decision, but I was of like growing slower, but 9.9% of, or 99% of the patients that walk through my door when they walk in are my ideal clients. I'm not having people bitch about their things. I'm not, you know, we have a good, we talk to them on the phone. They're willing to pay my fees. And so, I mean, our retention rate is super high. They're very grateful for my service. And I do, I mean, I go out of my way. I love what I do. I love going out of my way for people, but you have to be willing to pay that fee. If you're not willing to pay that fee, or you're going to bitch about everything, like you're not my ideal client. But so I've created this beautiful practice very slowly over time. but of people like our patients are wonderful. I love my clients. I love my employees. Like legitimately our employees, like when we leave at the end of the day, we're like, I love you. See you tomorrow. Like,
yeah, we do too.
that is a culture that I've created over time, you know, and it would have been different if it was just someone who was like, I don't know, I'll take this doctor. They take my insurance and we'll see what they have to say and what they can give me.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. I think that's such a good point. You know, I have a lot of people that are, you know, kind of trying to decide between, do I go all cash? Do I try to do hybrid? Really, I think it's kind of your tolerance level for how quickly you need things to grow. You know, the hybrid model, you'll get patients in the door. So you'll grow your actual clinical numbers faster. But now you've got to worry about, like you said, like that whole conversation about this is what insurance is going to cover, this is what it's not. And I mean, it can be done and it can be done very well. And I think there's some people that, you know, maybe want that comfort. I know I did. I mean, that's, I'm still technically hybrid because I needed that comfort level initially. I wasn't enough of a risk taker. I'm not a big fan of Vegas. So like, that's just not who I am, you know, but that was part of what I had to learn about myself when I was designing it. I think if you can go into it and honestly take that risk of being okay with it growing slower, you have nothing but your ideal patients. Like you're not backing out of anything later, you know, like and having to figure out who do I need to keep and who do I not want to have in here. And it like, it's just so much easier in terms of knowing that you have the right person in front of you every time. They're invested in their health. You're invested in their health. And it's really a team sport as opposed to like, oh, I'm here because my insurance said that you're a preferred provider.
And I mean, I coach docs on opening their own practice, or I did for a while. I've taken a break. But when I was coaching other physicians on opening their own business, like their own businesses, and it was always, you know, kind of telling them the same story. And I will say that 9 out of 10 of my clients who are physicians still would open hybrid practice or full insurance model practices, even after we talked about it. But this, so I think it's rare to just go straight into opening a cash practice. but I mean, my risk tolerance is high, and I like just seen it not work real well in my last practice. Yeah. And so I knew what I was getting into. Don't get me wrong. There were days where I was like, I can't believe I don't have more patients. Like, why do I do it this way? But
What am I doing? Yeah.
I don't know. But I just like, again, I didn't want to have the conversation of this is what's covered, this is what's not, or have to know that information or let people go when I decided I was done taking insurance. You know, I didn't want to establish relationships and then be like, oh, we're done.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's so funny when you get to that part where you actually, you start coaching other people. Like that was the same thing for me. I was like, I really want people to be able to do this for themselves. How do I make that happen? Like, how do I get people to understand that like, this is totally doable. Like we just have to like set up the guidelines.
And it should be, we should be doing this. Like we should be setting up our own clinics. I mean, if more physicians did it, like we wouldn't have these like private equity companies coming in or like hospital owned private practices, like because our healthcare system is so broken and like my patients get better, right? Like my patients get better. I don't have any other agenda than for them to feel better and then tell your friends, you know, like, so I can obviously, my revolving door is not because you're coming in 100 times. It's because you send your friends, you know?
Yes. Yes.
But like I get to spend time with patients and that's, I get to know patients and there is healing in our relationship. And that does not happen in a 7-minute visit where you're worried about what codes you're going to put in and like, oh, I'm going to code that. Like I talked to them about tobacco so I can make $5 more or whatever happens in the insurance model.
Right.
Like I just get to actually care. Like I get to do the job that I went to medical school for and then give them my very educated opinion or recommendations on medications or supplements or whatever. But that the relationship that I have with my patients is 15% of their healing, you know, and you don't get that elsewhere. And it's so important. And so if we can own these, our own clinics, you get to practice medicine in a way that aligns with your values and people feel that, you know, your values don't have to be my values. All whoever's listening can still think I'm crazy for what I'm doing, but like you get to do it your way.
Yeah.
And even if it's not my way, we are affecting health and we are affecting change in the healthcare system.
Yes.
Right. That is positive for everybody. And when everybody is practicing medicine, like all of my class went into medicine because they were altruistic people, or at least 99% of them. Like they wanted to make change and they wanted to, they didn't go into medicine to screw people over or talk to people for 7 minutes or whatever it is.
Right.
And so like, if we were all actually owned our own practices or worked together to make the world a better place through health, like the world would be a better place. It would be less of this, like I'm stuck in a job I don't like, or corporate medicine or administrators. I don't know. It's just like, it's
and I think it would be more on like healthcare and not sick care. Like we're not here to keep, keep putting people on medication and keep, I totally align on that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And like patients wouldn't be so sick, right? I mean, people would have better outcomes because the doctors are actually invested in you and not just doing it to do a job, like to be a number or whatever.
Right.
So,
no, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Completely.
I mean, I think your mission is important.
It's
I think the work you're doing is important. Like people should know that it can be done.
Yeah. You, and that's partly why I'm doing these series of interviews. Cause like, I want people to hear other people's experience and, you know, it's so easy when we look at social media and we look at people's practice websites, we're like, oh my God, well, they have it all figured out and I don't know what I'm doing. I could never do that. No, you totally can. Like, it's not easy for anybody, but there's a whole group of us that are doing this. You know?
And we don't do it alone. No. I have people that have come and gone that work on my social media for me. And honestly, my social media is the best when I do it myself. But then I have people that come and go. I mean, I have like, we do IVs in my clinic and I have a full-time medical assistant or nurse that does my IVs for me. So I'm not doing my IVs and seeing like, you know, there are people have virtual assistants, people have personal assistants to deal with their personal life so they can do their job. I mean, you get to do it your way and you get to have the help you need in the areas you want, you know, again, unless you are a trust fund baby or whatever, like you can't have all the help all the time, but we're not doing it alone either. Even though like I started me, myself and I, and like, I had the like thumbs up from my husband. I mean, so I was essentially alone and I'm still essentially alone, but I hire the necessary people to help me. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like you were saying on social media, people will see your social media and be like, you're doing so well, you're crushing it. And I feel like every time I get compliments on my social media is the times I feel like I'm drowning, or like, it looks like I'm crushing it. Is it times I feel like I want to give up and I'm drowning? I'm like, I am, because I sure don't feel that way. But so it's it's totally this perception that's like, it's just bizarre.
It is. It's very bizarre. It, and it's totally true. That is. It's usually how that goes. So tell me about these retreats that you do. I'm really excited about hearing about this.
I'll tell you how I added psychedelic medicine because didn't talk about that. But it was, years ago I had a psychedelic experience that changed my life. And it was a time when I was only not even a year into having my own practice. So it was stressful. I was working long days. And again, my husband was a stay-at-home dad. And so my husband had done this medicine and he's like, this medicine man is coming back to Colorado. You should try it. And I was like, it's 15 minutes. And in my mind, I'm literally like, I can do anything for 15 minutes.
Right.
But that's all he told me about it. I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, my husband is a man of few words. And so I was just like, okay, I'll try the thing. And so I meditated for like a month beforehand on show me the way in my business. Like I would just sit every morning for like 5 minutes and like, okay, like I want this journey to be show me the way in my business. And people had told me before I was going to do this, nothing to do with me doing it. Like I had friends or whatever, like, oh, I took mushrooms and like, I've never been depressed since, or I did the thing and it completely changed my
stuff.
Mental health.
Yeah.
And I didn't believe it. I'm going to say, like, I was just like, there's no way that like a mushroom journey that's 4 to 6 hours, you've had depression your whole life and it's gone. Like I was totally a non-believer. So anyhow, but I was like, whatever, I'll try this thing for 15 minutes. That sounds about like my, time tolerance.
Right. Attention span. I could do this. Yeah.
And the medicine I did is not legal in the US, but it's called Bufo or 5-MeO-DMT. And you smoke it and you are immediately at like, I mean, not in this world. You have no concept that you're a human.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It's hard to describe. But anyhow, it was amazing for me. It changed my life. And there was a brief moment during my journey where it was like, there's no need to be afraid or anxious. That was such a small part of my journey. Most of it was like, I mean, it was beautiful. I felt one with the universe. I really felt like I got this like deep understanding of why people are so anxious. And like when I was coming to in this world, it was fascinating. And when I was coming to in this world, because like suddenly like you start hearing, we were outside. And so hearing the birds or whatever, and like, it was like my right brain was like, this is beautiful. And the colors were amazing. And I'm like floating. And my left brain, like no joke, was like, but what neurologically just happened to make like whatever just happened. And it was like my two brains. This brain was like, but I'm so in love and it's beautiful. And my left brain was like, but I want to know what just happened. And that was kind of fun. I was like sitting with that. Anyhow, for 2 months after that. So it took me like probably a week or two on my own, like to process what happened. Like my brain was kind of confused, to be honest. I was a normal person. I went to work the next day.
Yeah.
But I would sit in the mornings and just be like, I don't even understand. Like, I mean, I went through like, is this medicine man really a medicine man? Like, or is he just giving people drugs?
Did I just take drugs for no reason? Like,
it was very like confused. But all of this like processing for me, I think looking back was part of the process that was necessary. Right. So it wasn't about just what happened in that 15 minutes. It was like the processing of the information that started happening for weeks afterwards. The life-changing part, well, was actually twofold, but the most valuable life-changing part for me was that, like, there's no need to be afraid or anxious, which like, I wouldn't have even written home about. Like for 2 months after that journey, as close to literally as possible, I did not feel my feet touch the ground. Like I was light as a person, and like intellectually nothing had changed, but energetically is the only way I can describe it. Like nothing bothered me. Like I didn't know I had anxiety, and like, I'm not like medicated or whatever. I still don't think I have anxiety. Yeah. I just think that's what drives me. I didn't know. I would never have classified that until it was gone. Like,
wow.
I would go into work and like, there was no fear of failure. It was just like, I would get the same work done, but like without this like hustle or this,
this undercurrent of self-doubt sitting there.
It was so gone. All of the self-doubt, all of the worry that I didn't even know I had was gone. And I just felt light and wonderful. And that was the life-changing part to me, was the recognition of the power of these medicines to affect you in such a greater way than that 15-minute experience.
That's
and
so
then
profound.
I understood why, like, my friend who was like, oh, I took mushrooms and my depression's gone. Like, I got it, because this is actually root cause medicine. Like, you are able in other journeys to go deep within yourself and see yourself outside of yourself and move beyond the stories you tell yourself, move beyond thinking that you have depression or thinking you have anxiety. Like, you get to see root cause, what those things are, and move beyond it. It's fascinating.
That's fantastic.
That
I
was
love
the
everything
life
about
most,
this.
that was the most life-changing part for me. And then part of that, like kind of 2 week or whatever it was, like when I was processing, it was such a strong, like, you need to offer this to your patients. And I couldn't get over it. And I was like, and so
Well,
ketamine is what's legal for physicians to do. Like I
of
couldn't. And
course.
so for a year, I was like, there's no way I'm doing ketamine, because back when I worked at that initial pain management clinic, we also did addiction medicine, and we saw people addicted to ketamine and
Yeah,
heroin. And I was like,
all
I'm
over the
not giving
place.
people
Not
ketamine. Like,
doing that.
it's correct. And but I fought with it for a year, and it would not leave me. It was like every cell in my body knew that, like, I had to do it. So one day I decided, and being a PM&R doc, we are trained in pain management with ketamine. So one day I was like, you know what, I'm going to do it. Like, I mean, in my mind. And within that month, three of my patients asked me if I did ketamine. And so the answer was yes. And we just started doing it. And it has been life-changing for my patients. And I still don't love ketamine as like my favorite psychedelic, but it's what's legal. So obviously I can't do bufo. That's not legal in the USA, but there are other ones. I mean, there are other ones. I mean, none of them are legal except ketamine for me to administer. But A, I started doing it, but B, it makes sense for my practice. My mission is to help people optimize and up-level their health and their life in whatever manner possible. And if you can't get over this mind game, and this are connected, like, you're never going to heal yourself, whether it's anxiety, depression. I've had someone who had major gut health issues, and she came to me for gut health, and we ended up doing a series of five ketamine treatments in a row. And she realized that her gut health stemmed from trauma she had from her mother as a kid, and therefore anxiety, and then her gut health, and like has been able to completely like heal herself with that realization. Like, I'm summarizing, you know, it was a
I
course. It
love
wasn't just
this.
like, but
I mean,
like
it takes
completely
time, but
her gut. Yeah. Because of that. And so it's just like the power of psychedelics in what I do, like in just true, like holistic, like it's not the medicine that's fixing you. It's what you do with the information on the medicine or in the days following, because it still takes work. I mean, had I not sat every morning after my bufo experience and just tried to process and just allowed whatever to come up or whatever, if I just went back to work and was like, okay, that was an experience, it would have been an experience that was fun, but I don't think that it would have impacted or changed my life the same.
And that probably gave you a ton of courage as a business owner to just be like, all right, it's gonna happen.
I mean, it's like this inner knowing that we talked about earlier, right? It's like I knew that this is important work. It's important work for people. And again, my only motivation is like I want to help people move beyond their whatever it is that's holding them back in life, whether it's physically, mentally, or the combination of the two. Because I truly think, you know, when we're healthy and we're feeling good and we don't have pain and we have energy, like we're happier and we are positive and we affect that in the world. Is healthier and happier, like we are going to truly like up level the world. It's not just, you know, ourselves or whatever.
Oh, I love this. I love this. So then you turn this into retreats. This is like
Yes. So sorry, that was a long explanation. Sorry of how I
No,
added that. But
I
yes,
love it.
I just realized, you know, you can't affect change like always one-on-one, or you know, just in like, I mean, my office is not so sterile, but it's still a medical office, like, so we'll call it a sterile medical office. And you know, people will come in for ketamine, and I actually take a very indigenous ceremonial approach to my psychedelic treatments,
Very
but it's
cool.
still like people need more than one session. And so I was just like, I want people to be able to get outside of their lives and affect positive health change. And so my retreats are, I mean, I call them full wellness retreats, where we're doing exercise and eating super healthy, and we're doing mind, body, spirit. I mean, so we're working on our physical bodies and then going into a psychedelic journey where you sit and you deal with your mental health, you know, and you don't have to have a mental health issue to want to up level yourselves, right? We talked about entrepreneurs all have to do a ton of inner work. And so they've just been these beautiful spaces where people come for 4 days and are able to process lots of things and feel physically good and just release, you know? So I try to host them quarterly, either in Colorado or California, because that's where I'm licensed. But yeah, that's how the retreats kind of added, is I just wanted to spend more time with people.
I love this. I love this. Do you feel like do you get stretched kind of thin doing all the different aspects of this? Like, do you feel that
Oh
sometimes?
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, all the time.
Like all the time.
I actually, I stopped doing the retreats for the past year because of that. I was just like, I mean, like I will say, event planning is neither my forte or something I like.
Right.
So I just want to show up and have it all done. But so, like the retreats that I host, like I hire a cook. I mean, we get an Airbnb. There's a
Yep.
lot of moving parts. I hire a yoga instructor. There's a lot of like people to manage. And the last retreat that I hosted, I got an event planner to do it for me, and that was great. And so then I tried to do another one, and I was just like, I don't want to coordinate all these people. People
Yeah.
cancel, people whatever. That's like, I'm so uninterested. So once I started, when I had to do it again, like all on my own, I was like, I can't, that's too much for me. The like
Right.
managing of the people who are flakes and like pricing and all that. I just want someone to price it all out, tell me more or less how much it's going to cost, and then advertise it and do it. So yes, I feel like I get too stretched too thin. And then you know what? Like it was a hard decision. But I was like, you know what? Right now I need to take this off my plate, and that's okay.
And I think having the knowledge that, like, that's okay if I don't do that right now is so key for any entrepreneur. Like, so
Yeah.
key. And don't beat yourself up
Right.
about it.
Right. I mean, I think I did beat myself up for a little bit, but also because I want to do it all right now all the time, because
Of
also in my
course.
practice, where I see my practice going, is combining the two. I mean, again, if I could be with people for a week or whatever, maybe we do telemed and we do some labs, or I mean, whatever, maybe we send them on this like intention setting. Like if someone has knee pain, my athletes, and we're going to do stem cells, we have a whole like meditation intention setting thing that helps them believe that they have the power of healing within themselves, then see the stem cells heal themselves, then come here, do a stem cell procedure where I'm sticking, stem cells to help heal your knee, and then take you on a psychedelic journey where it's like a rocket ship to seeing like that true healing within. Like I want people to spend time with me where we can really help them heal at like a deep level. And not everyone has to do like psychedelics or whatever, but I see like what I do in my medical practice and my retreats not being completely separate,
Exclusive.
if that makes sense. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I want to come see you. Shoot.
Anytime.
Right. So what are some of the tips that you would give maybe practice owners, maybe the ones that are just starting and also ones that are already in business? Like what kind of business tips or even, mind frame tips do you think you would give them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for, when I coach docs to open their own business, the tip is like, you can do it. We all have like I mean, you can do it, period. If I can do it, you can do it. And we hear that all the time, but we all start from somewhere. And again, I think my journey might resonate with some people or be unique. Like, I came from nothing. I mean, we didn't have this huge savings. My husband, we were just having babies, like stay-at-home dad. We got a business loan and we just did it. So you don't have to have $1 million in the bank. You can just do it and you find the time. So we all start from somewhere. So you have to start by starting, and we're all scared, but you do it anyways. Don't let fear hold you back. So for the people who haven't opened their businesses, the beautiful thing too is you get to do it your way. So we think, and it's going to be modeled when you open it or how you're doing it now after wherever you came from, because that's what you know. But you actually get to do it your way every single day. And so if you don't like it, or if you want to mold it or change it, go for it,
Change
because it's
it.
yours.
Yep.
You
It's
literally
yours.
get to change it. You get to do it your way. So for the newbies, I would say like start and do it your way. And for the people in business, yeah, I mean, kind of the same. Like, don't be stagnant. You don't, if there's something that you don't like, whether it's working or whether it isn't, if you don't like it, change it, And it's all, life is trial and error. Nobody has it all figured out all the time. So no matter what you're seeing outside looking in, like somebody's business might be amazing, but they're not doing so well in their home life, or someone's home life might be amazing. Like I think I actually have a very good work-life balance, and I don't believe in work-life balance at the same time. Like, and I do. I mean, I work approximately 8 hours. Like I don't generally work these huge long days. I did when I first opened. Anymore, my kids are older, they need me. I go home at 5. Like I drive them all over the world, and I'm a mom from 5 until bedtime, and then I wake up and I do it again, and I wake up and I meditate and I work out, and then I go to work. Like I have a pretty good balance, but it's still a lot. And you just can't have it. You can have it all. I just don't think you can have it all at once,
Yeah,
all the
I
time.
would agree with that. I would agree with that. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have it all. It's just maybe at different times, maybe not in the way that you initially envisioned it, but it will be there and you can bring it in. That's fantastic.
And I think the beauty of the business too, or of owning a business too, is like seeing what comes. Because if you're so rigid, like this is how I want my business to look, and it's the only way, hey, you get stuck in that potential of being like unhappy, right?
Yeah.
So if you're unhappy in your business, don't get me wrong, there are days where I'm like, I want to quit. Like I'm totally done. Like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know? I mean, those are like twice a month.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying, like that still happens like regularly. But then there's days, but I never hate going to work because of my work. Like there's some days I just rather like be on my mountain bike, but that's like always going to happen, right? Because it's beautiful in Colorado and I love mountain biking and sports are my happy place, but it's never because I don't love what I do.
Yes. Yes. I think that's a really cool, important distinction. It's when you're going into a job you hate, it makes you start to hate what you do. And that's not where you need to be at all. Like that's not even the problem, you know, it's a symptom
in school.
Yeah. Yes. It's not the problem.
Like love what you do.
Yes. Yes. If you can walk in it, like I only work 3 days a week right now and it's glorious. I work longer days because that works for me, but I love going into my office and my staff love being there and we have a great time. And then just for my own mental health, I'm like, I'm not going to be here the next 2 days. They're like, great. We got the fort held down. Cool. You know? And it's that works for me, but having your own business, you get to design that the way that you want, like you've done too.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think it's important. And I actually bringing that up for business owners, like when I opened my practice, I was like, I'm only going to work 4 days a week one day is going to be admin.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Like if you're clinical, do not open a business and try to see patients for 5 days. You need at least 1 day of admin. Now my practice is so busy. I need at least 2 days of admin and that still feels like not enough, but that's what I'm like delegating. 2 days of clinical, 2 days of admin. Well, I still do 3 days of clinical, but my goal is 2 days of clinical, 2 days of admin and a 3 day weekend.
Yeah.
So my number one advice would actually be like, do not see patients at minimum one of those days of week, because you have to focus on, and it's such a different part of your brain to be creative with the business or do these sorts of interviews or go and market yourself or write emails or do social media or hire new people. Like just do not, like you're not going to lose out on money because you don't see patients 1 day a week.
Yeah, you actually, I think, will lose more money. And I think people get caught in this trap. You will lose more money by not taking that time to work on your business and instead trying to work in your business the whole time. Like you won't move your business.
And there's always
going
to be people who want to see you every day.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But that's not,
there's still people who are like, oh, can you see patients Mondays? And for the first few years, I was like, sure, I'll just see one patient, but one patient turns into two.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the one patient where I thought I was just going to start an IV, they were going to sit there for an hour or two and I wasn't going to talk to them. No, then we're talking the whole time. So have your boundaries and stick with that. Like it's important. The only time, I mean, I will see patients if they come in from out of town and like, literally they're driving in or they can't see me. But I mean, I didn't have good boundaries at first, but I have boundaries now. I'm like, nope, I just don't see patients on Mondays or Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's on them to figure out when they can come see me.
Yep. Have your boundaries in place. I love that for existing people and for new people. Like that's fantastic. Okay. So at the end of every interview, I'm liking to ask people, like, if you had like one or two books that you'd like to recommend that were like really impactful for you, what would they be?
You know, it's a funny question because it's always the most recent book I've read. It's never like one that I read so long ago. So I'm currently reading Traction for Business.
I love that book.
Which I'm loving. It just talks about, it's taking me forever because I'm taking notes and stuff. And I actually don't like to read with like a computer open and taking notes. So it's taking me forever, but I'm loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to help. I'm having a retreat for my employees, focus on the business. And I'm going to use a lot of the like values and mission and all that. So business owners, I think Traction is a wonderful book. And then I just read a book called Braiding Sweetgrass, which is written by an indigenous woman and just Robin. Mm-hmm. I think it's Robin Well Primer or something like that. But I don't know. It speaks to my being in the psychedelic space, really trying to honor the land and the old indigenous cultures and just coming back to what's important and feeling the land and respecting the land and having a reciprocal relationship with anything, like not just take, like I'm not just going to like take from my garden, I give to my garden too, or, you know, the garden gives to me, or we don't just take from each other. We, everything in life is reciprocal, and we can't just, you know, kill Mother Earth kind of
that's
thing.
Fantastic.
So that one's been really beautiful.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I'm trying to put this together so that, like, as these suggestions come up, we're putting it on our website as like a, you know, a resources for people, like putting together a library essentially for everybody.
Yeah.
So I'll find those links and I'll make sure to get those, but I'm pretty sure Traction's already up there, 'cause that's one of my favorites too. So I'm interested in the other
What's
one though.
Your
That
other...
sounds really good.
It is interesting. You know, I don't know if it would be interesting for most of your readers, but it's just the path, the journey that I'm on right
I
now.
think it's
I actually read the
fantastic.
junior's version because the adult version is so like intense.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's good to know.
What's your favorite book these days?
You know, I've always gone back to Traction's definitely up there. I've always gone back to The Pumpkin Plan by Mike Michalowicz. It's such a cool one. If you ever are into audiobooks, he is a fabulous narrator. He does his own audiobooks, and he's just funny and like engaging, and so it, you know, it keeps that up. But just the concepts in it, when you're trying to kind of figure out how to like niche down your business, I think those are, it's just such a cool way of thinking about it from a business perspective. And it helps with kind of like how Traction does, where it's like the working on your business as opposed to just like being in it and in the weeds every single day. So I really like most of his books, but The Pumpkin Patch was, or Pumpkin Plan was one of the first ones I
I
read.
haven't
So,
read that. That's
oh,
good to know.
I would do it. It's a pretty quick read, but it's a good framework one.
Okay,
So
cool. Yeah, I read,
yeah,
he wrote Profit First, right?
he
I
did.
think I
He
read that
did.
one.
That was one of the other ones. That's really, really interesting. It's an interesting process and approach. I like that one too. So yeah. Well, good. I loved
Yeah,
doing this. Thank you
it's an
so
interesting.
much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been really fun talking to
This is
you.
yeah, this has been really great. All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. And I'm gonna make sure to put on our post where everybody can find you. Because I know that I mean, are you okay with people reaching out on like Instagram and Facebook?
Sure, anywhere. Facebook
Beautiful.
is not, I mean, if you do the chat thing on Facebook, I'm never going to respond.
I know.
But
That's me too. Yeah. All right. And I'll make sure to put the retreat website up there too for people, because I think some people might be really, really interested in that. So we'll make sure we get all that up there for you. Thank you so
thank
much. I
you.
appreciate
This is so
it.
nice. Yeah, have a wonderful weekend.
You too. All right. Have a good one.